Thanks for listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Now, coming to you live from the banks of the Willamette River, it's Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman.
You've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
Online at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
I want you to get up right now and go to the window and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, and today we are talking about freedom. The numbers here are 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. It's an appropriate subject for the kind of day that we are having here in Portland. It is a day to celebrate our freedom. The sun is out at last. It's 70 degrees. It's one of those days that we really pay for here in Portland. It's just so damn gray for so long. And on days like this, as I was driving here, I'm thinking, I'm going to go in and I'm going to talk to people about freedom. And we're talking about the difference between political freedom and personal freedom. And we're having this discussion also on Facebook. I encourage you to go to Facebook, type in Mad as Hell in America, like the page. We've got 9,133 people who contribute and participate and like our page. We have a smoking Facebook page, so we want you to call in or go to the Facebook page. Again, the numbers here are 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. So freedom, let's talk about it politically. Which one of the amendments appeals to you most? Is it freedom of religion? Is it freedom of speech? Is it freedom of the press? Is it the right to privacy, the right to assembly? Which one speaks most dearly to you? The right to bear arms, I dare say. Call in 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. I don't think we're going to get a lot of Second Amendment calls here. We do have a call on the board. Our good friend, Glenn Geller, from the Washington County Democrats. Glenn, welcome to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. And before you plug, you got to tell me what freedom means to you.
Well, thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me.
Oh, sure.
And thanks for having Karen and I on a couple weeks ago. We had a lot of really great response from folks who heard it, and it's on our website, washcodems.org, is the where you can listen to a rebroadcast of that great interview that we got to do with you.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, and I got a lot of great feedback on it too.
Let me tell you a story about freedom. I was listening to the opening thing about that, and it reminded me of something that happened several years ago. I'm a private pilot. I have a little airplane. I keep it out at Hillsboro Airport. And this morning was beautiful, and I went out to the airport, and I got in my little plane, and I flew out to Pacific City and flew around the coast for a while. And it's sunny and beautiful, and that's a privilege we enjoy, one of many, many privileges we enjoy as Americans. I have a former coworker who is a Korean national, and he used to come to the States for training when we worked at the same company, and I would train him. And I took him flying one day. I said, hey, after work, let's go. We'll get in a little plane. We'll go for a ride. And his eyes opened up and went, really? And I said, sure. And he says, do I need to bring my passport? I didn't think we're going to go to Canada. But we went for a ride, and we're flying in the little plane over Columbia River, and I put his hands on the control and give him a couple of instructions, and he's flying an airplane. And he looks at me, and I think just about tears in his eyes, says, we could never do this in my country.
Wow.
This doesn't happen in Korea. This
wow.
doesn't happen in a lot of countries. America and Canada and some European countries, it still happens. And, that's freedom to me is being able to enjoy my life, recognizing that I have obligations to others
right.
as well,
Right.
You know, that's...
Freedom is the responsibility that we take for ourselves and others. Absolutely. That's why I am so angry at the Republican agenda, because it's all so selfish and self-centered. It's all about the privileged few. We're not building a society that works for everyone. By their view, we are building a society that works for very, very few. All right, Glenn, go. I want to read some Facebook stuff. So what's on the agenda at the Washco Dems?
You know, speaking of freedoms, this Wednesday, April 27th, at the Washco Dems Central Committee meeting, which starts at 6:30, doors open at 6:30 for social time, and 7 to 9 p.m. is our actual business meeting. Our guest is going to be Demi Espinoza of Basic Rights Oregon. She's the Portland field organizer for BRO.
Right.
And BRO is an organization that advocates for equal rights for the GLBT, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community, marriage rights. They have a great website themselves, basicrights.org, and a great program that they're working on now.
They do amazing work here.
Marriage Matters Oregon, with some great TV ads. A lot of folks have seen them. And she's going to be talking about marriage equality. You know, as good Democrats, we support people having the freedom to live the life they want to live with respect and security for all, taking care of the weak, and keeping the powerful accountable so that everyone can have a fair shake at this American dream. And that includes marriage rights for non-heterosexual families and recognition as such.
Glenn, go on, sorry.
I'll finish with, go to washcodems.org. Right on the front page is the blast for our April Central Committee meeting with the maps and all the stuff that's going on, and we want everyone to show up and support this great, great cause and meet your elected officials and candidates, too. It's going to be a really exciting evening.
Glenn Geller of the Washco Dems, washcodems.org. Thanks so much for calling in and for all the great work that you do. We can't wait to have you back on the show.
Thank you very much, Adam. You have a great weekend. We'll enjoy the rest of the show.
Well, thank you. So he brings up this whole idea of marriage equality. I don't know if anyone's been paying attention to some of the issues, but as you know, every once in a while, the Obama administration just takes a stand on principle, which is really, really refreshing when they do. And they've decided that they're not going to challenge DOMA, that they're going to let it stand. They're not going to promote it. And it looks like Boehner is going to take it up. So there you go. Trying to restrict the marriage equality, the marriage freedom. They want to tell me and you whom we can marry. Whom we can marry. These are the freedom lovers. These are the flag wavers. And they want to tell us whom, I think it's whom we can marry. I want to go to the Facebook page and get some comments. It's Facebook. You go to Mad as Hell in America at Facebook and join in the conversation. Carol sent me an email or a message saying, I loved what you said about freedom, Adam. It does all come down to each one of us taking responsibility, freeing / unconditioning our minds and opening our hearts. Absolutely. It's when we do that, Carol, and thanks so much for sending the message. When we do that, we're better equipped to fight the fight, because when we confuse our personal darkness and commingle it with the darkness of the world, then we are just in the same soup that we are trying to transform. So we must begin, when we fight the fight for justice, we must have no hatred in us. There is a correlation between how we hold the world and how we fight for justice, how we hold ourselves, how we hold our neighbors. So I'm not a big fan of John Boehner, but I refuse to hate him. He pisses me off, and I'm pissed off at the Republicans, and I'm really angry at the people behind those elected officials that are calling the shots. And we've got to take aim at them, and we've got to stand up to them. But we can't do it until, at the same time that we're doing that, we also have to be working our personal freedom, getting free of the hate and the rage that makes us ineffective. If you think about the people who have been most effective throughout human history, when you think of Gandhi, when you think of Martin Luther King Jr., these are people that worked to free themselves of their own hatred. I remember something Martin Luther King said. He said, I don't have to like my enemy, but I have to love them. That's as he was doing battle. Can you imagine how terrified he was? Can you imagine the fear and the anxiety? But he refused to hate. He worked, as Gandhi said, on the demons in his own heart at the same time that we take a bold political stand. It makes us stronger. It makes us more effective. This is it's simultaneous. You know, when I made this mistake, when George Bush got into office, I panicked and I kind of ran out into the world, you know, and I said, I'm going to got my little sword in my hand and I'm going to do battle. And I thought, you know, man, I'll save the world and save myself all at the same time. But it doesn't work that way, man. I ran out of steam because I was so full of hatred. I was so angry, so disappointed, and so confused within myself about what I wanted. And I was aggrandizing myself at the same time that I was doing battle, and I couldn't see it. I finally just kind of just collapsed. And then after I was exhausted, I just fell into hatred and resentment and fear. And I went to crazy town. I went to conspiracy crazy town because I hadn't really been checking in with my own demons as I was fighting what I perceived was injustice in the world. And that's when I started to think about mad as hell. What does mad as hell, the part of mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore, that I love most, is he says right before that, he says, I'm a human being. My life has value. That's what we're standing up for, the value of human lives, our lives as individuals. Our lives as a collective, not just for our country, but for the whole world. And we have to start to demand this. We have to look within ourselves and get creative and get mad as hell and never give up that line. Numbers here, 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620, and on Facebook at Mad as Hell in America. I'm going to read, this is from Joan Lubar Alvarez. She says, speaking of freedom, what is going on in Michigan? Since when can a mayor and a city council be told they no longer have any power and the city will be run by some overseer? Please talk about Benton Harbor and what is happening there and the rest of Michigan. For those of you who don't know, Governor Rick Snyder has declared a state of financial emergency, and he has sent in emergency financial managers who have the power, under a kind of martial law, to fire city councilors, fire mayors, break union contracts, shred contracts with public employees, and start over. You see, for me, and thank you so much, Joan, because that's really important. We got about a minute and a half. Kathy, line one, welcome to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. Kathy, how are you? Welcome to Mad as Hell in America. Are you enjoying this? Are you in Hillsboro? Are you enjoying this beautiful day?
It's a beautiful day.
Stunning. Stunning. We're thrilled. What's up, Kathy? What makes you mad as hell? Or how do you define freedom?
Well, I was just thinking of the paradox that you mentioned about, and it kind of roused me when a lot of conservative talkers and or thinkers will talk about they want the government out of our business. And yet, they try to tell people who to marry and...
Well, yeah, it seems like it's big government for the little guy and little government for the big guy, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
capitalism for the wealthy, but...
Yeah, the rest of it...
Capitalism cutthroat. I mean, not that capitalism's bad, but it's cutthroat capitalism for those who aren't...
Unregulated capitalism is just corporate jihad by another name, and that's what we're living
in. Good one.
I gotta go, Kathy. Thanks so much for the call. When we come back, David Swanson, our good friend, is back from Afghanistan where he went on a peace mission. He's going to be here for a couple of segments, so if you're waxing your car, turn up your radio, go grab yourself a beer, enjoy the sunshine. David Swanson, our good friend, an articulate, passionate proponent of peace, will be here with us. We're honored to have him. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman on AM 620 KPOJ. We'll be right back.
Let the Klugman revolution begin!
Welcome Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman, and you're listening to AM 620, KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Today, we are talking about freedom and all the ways in which we define it, all the ways in which we appreciate it, both personal and political. And our next guest is somebody who fights for freedom in the form of justice and peace. Because peace, I think, not dissent, but peace is the highest form of justice. Of peace is the highest form of freedom. That is ultimate freedom. David Swanson is our guest. He is author of War is a Lie and Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. He blogs at davidswanson.org and warisacrime.org. David Swanson holds a master's degree in philosophy from the University of Virginia. I'd like to talk to him about that someday. He has worked as a newspaper reporter and a communications director, including press secretary for Denis Kucinich's 2004 campaign and media coordinator for the International Labor Communications Association, and 3 years as communications coordinator for ACORN, now defunct after being attacked. Swanson is a vocal and supremely articulate advocate for peace. These are my words now, and one of our nation's most engaged social activists. He has just come back from Afghanistan, where he joined an international group of peace activists, meeting with ordinary and prominent Afghans in Kabul. David Swanson, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for that intro.
Oh, you know, I'm one of your biggest fans. I love the work that you do, and I love the commitment, and I also just admire how articulate and passionate you are. But that's enough. We'll do the fan club later. If you start a fan club, I'll be the president. David Swanson, davidswanson.org is our guest. The last time that we talked to you, you were on your way to Afghanistan. You and I Skyped, and it was ended up being just a terrific interview. Just refresh people's memories. Why did you go to Afghanistan?
To see one of the places where we have our wars. In fact, our longest war ever, depending on how you measure the Vietnam War. You know, it's something that I think if everyone would do, go to one of the countries where we're having a war, go to a poor country where we're going to have a war sooner or later, and just meet the people briefly even, I think it would change the world. You know, I couldn't get a scientific sampling of public opinion in the country of Afghanistan. I couldn't go to every region, you know, but I could get a sense that will never leave my mind of some of the people that I met. And I think that makes a difference. You know, we don't have our wars here, and we don't have them in some neutral football field. We have them in other people's towns and cities. I don't think we feel that without being there.
Tell me a little bit about the Afghan people themselves. What kind of people are they? What kind of culture are they? I really don't know much. I think Americans probably have, you know, there's this whole thing that they live in the Stone Age, and I think that people have probably a misperception of who and a misconception of who they are. Tell us about the Afghan people themselves. What kind of people are they?
Well, you know, the sample of Afghan people that I met was heavily slanted toward the educated and cosmopolitan and foreign traveled. Sure. I mean, I was in the capital city, but Afghanistan is, you know, the middle of nowhere. There are people in little valleys in the mountains that never leave them. I came home and I did an event talking about the trip, and a gentleman stood up and asked me, would it make a huge difference to Afghan public opinion if they found out that 9/11 was really an inside job? You know, you always get those questions, but in this case, I had to say, you know, the polls I've seen of the Afghan people, not the educated people, but of all the Afghan people, over 90% have yet to hear about 9/11.
Oh, my
right?
Goodness.
You know, so it's not that it's not that they're taking credit for it. It's that, you know, here you're talking about people who are being killed by the United States military, and would it suddenly make them think the United States was somehow bad if they found out that some crime they never heard of was an inside job? I mean, this is how out of touch we are. On the other hand, you know, many Afghans are very well informed. They're informed by the BBC and other sources, but they're also heavily informed by U.S. dominated media and U.S. propaganda in their country. It's a very illiterate country dependent on TV and radio, but you know the people you meet in Kabul are very literate in several languages and very smart, and they understand the United States government's behavior perhaps better than we do.
Interesting. David Swanson is our guest, author of War's a Lie and Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. DavidSwanson.org and WarIsACrime.org is the website. So you go over to Afghanistan, and you're on your way there on a kind of a peace, I wouldn't say a peacekeeping mission, but certainly to meet with others interested in peace in Afghanistan. And what happens? You're on the plane, and I read a blog entry. You're about to land, and then you don't land. What happened?
Well, I had difficulty getting online or getting a cell phone to work or anything once I'd gotten over to the Middle East. I flew to Dubai to switch planes, and I was getting email messages from friends and allies saying, "Don't go, it's dangerous. There's stuff going down." And it seemed to be that there was this protest in northern Afghanistan, which ended up killing seven employees of the United Nations. And
this was the protest in response to Terry Jones burning the Quran.
That was advertised as the primary motivation, was this Florida preacher burning the Quran, which had happened some weeks before, but they had found out and become enraged about. And the president of Afghanistan was taking heat for having promoted that anger. But I ended up going and being careful and came back fine.
Well, we're going to find out more. We're talking to David Swanson. DavidSwanson.org is the website. He has just back from Afghanistan, where he met with others interested in establishing long-term peace in the world. He is one of our most articulate and passionate peace proponents and peace activists. We're going to have another 15 minutes at least with David coming up next to hear all about his trip. I'm going to play some clips. David, so you'll stay with us into the next segment?
Sounds good.
Great. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman on AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. We'll be right back with David Swanson.
Something happening here, what it is ain't
welcome
exactly
back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's one and only progressive talk station, and thank God for it. We're talking to David Swanson, author of War is a Lie and Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. He has a tremendous blog over at davidswanson.org. He is one of the most prolific bloggers I know, also one of the most articulate. davidswanson.org and warisacrime.org are the websites. And David is back from a peace mission to Afghanistan, and we're going to ask him some questions. David, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back.
So we left off. So you finally make it to Afghanistan, and when you get there, how are you received as an American? How are you feeling?
Well, I met some fellow Americans and international peace activists, and many of the people I met were Afghan friends of theirs and foreign aid workers, and we met with members of parliament and professors and students and organizations. But I was widely warned that it was a death sentence to be an American in most places when there was a protest rally against the U.S. occupation at the Kabul University, I would have loved to go and cheer and speak out against my own government and on behalf of two-thirds of American citizens who want to end this thing.
Right.
But I was told, you go there, you'll get killed. And so there's a lot more marches and protests than the incidents of violence that get all the news, just as is the case anywhere. But most of the marches and protests have that risk of violence. And if you're American, you're the target.
So this may make my next question moot, but I was going to ask you, how do the Afghans that you met feel about our occupation of their country? And you were saying earlier, many of them don't even understand at least the justification for why we're there. Is that right?
Well, I think they understand it better than we do. They're aware. I mean, and I'm talking about the people I met in Kabul,
right.
But they're aware of the history going back to 1979 when we were provoking the Soviet Union to come in there and wreak havoc, and we were arming the Mujahideen. We were arming all the warlords that are now on the other side of the warlords we're now arming, and they know that whole history. And so
Right. Even
among those who want the U.S. occupation, who think that the U.S. is not as bad as the Taliban and are terrified of the Taliban, wouldn't trust the U.S. as far as they could throw it, don't imagine for a minute that we're there for humanitarian purposes. They believe the U.S. is there for its own imperial interests, as do I.
Let's expand on that a little bit. So what are U.S. imperial interests in Afghanistan?
Well, we know that the United States wants to have permanent military bases there and is building them, is continuing to build shiny new bases without any sign of let up or departure. We know it, I mean, it's been openly advocated by the makers of this war as one of the primary goals, that we want to have a natural gas pipeline through Afghanistan and protected. We want the resources. We want the territory. We want to base weapons. NATO wants to put nuclear weapons in Afghanistan. It's a very strategically located spot. And then, of course, there are the political interests or misguided ideas of what they might be. Right? I mean, after Johnson and Nixon were thrown out of the White House for refusing to lose a war, and we have two-thirds of the country saying, hurry up and lose this war already, you know that Obama is terrified of being the guy who loses the war. And there's all the profiteering. I mean, there are a lot of people getting rich off this war. It's not just Greg Martinson. It's not just the Afghan warlords. It's the U.S. military and the war profiteers who are raking it in and are funneling an ever greater portion of it back into congressional and presidential campaigns. It's a very corrupt business.
It sure is, and it just works on so many levels. I mean, as you're saying, it works at the level of, okay, there's this new land, there's a pipeline, there's all, and then like, oh, wow, look at all these minerals and look at all these natural resources we didn't even know were there, and the actual war machine itself, what prosecutes the war, is insanely profitable for the very people that we kind of want to remove from power. So it seems to be a vicious, huge circles. But what about this idea the president says, you know, we're going to be out in 6 months, we're going to be out in July? I mean, is it just ludicrous?
Well, he's never said that, unless it happened today.
I haven't
been paying attention. What he's said for quite some time now, repeatedly, is that he will begin a withdrawal in July of 2011, meaning one guy or 10,000 or some number of people will leave in July 2011, which will begin a process of drawdown over a period of years or decades until everybody's gone or not. And, you know, this is a president who came in, and there was maybe 30,000 troops and almost that many contractors in Afghanistan, you know, and has tripled it. You know, we have roughly 100,000 troops and more than that, contractors in Afghanistan, through a pair of what were called surges, right? The 2009 surge
right.
and the 2010 surge. Well, if they're surges, they have to end, right? And if we were there to unseat the Taliban, well, we did that a decade ago, you know, just as we prevented the supposed massacre in Benghazi. You know, the excuses to start the war drag on for years and years after that sort of played out,
right.
And we're clearly there for some other purpose.
One of your blog posts is entitled Blood in the Streets of Afghanistan, and the quote is, a pattern of killing civilians in the street from the air and the ground. It's a pretty terrifying post. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, I went there not long after these photos came out in Rolling Stone and elsewhere of this group of U.S. soldiers who called themselves a kill team and went out and
right.
killed Afghans for sport and posed with the corpses.
Right.
But we are routinely dropping missiles into people's homes, kicking in people's doors at night, yanking people out, and their families never see them again. There are a constant stream of atrocities of U.S. helicopters shooting little boys one after another. You know, it's just, outrageous. And this is what seems to build, reasonably enough, the resistance and the anger even more than the stories of what's done in prisons and torture and so forth. I mean, we're killing people. And so while I was there, there wasn't just the burning of the Koran in Florida thing, but there was incident after incident of convoys running people over, people being killed in night raids and taken away from their families and so forth, and incidents of nonviolent and violent reaction to all of that. And there are even among those who say, oh, we're just traumatized by the Taliban, and there could be nothing worse than the Taliban, and the Taliban will come back and get us, and there are those there who say that, they too are outraged by the conduct of this occupation. But ultimately, there's no other way to do it, because ultimately, the U.S. soldiers cannot identify who the supposed enemy is and who's an innocent civilian. They all look the same because they're there living in their country.
We're talking to David Swanson, author of War is a Lie and Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. DavidSwanson.org and WarIsACrime.org. Everything you ever wanted to know about what's going on in Afghanistan is there, certainly at DavidSwanson.org. David, when you went to Afghanistan, you met with a group called the Afghan Youth Peace Volunteers, and you interviewed a gentleman named Hakim. Tell us a little bit about him. I want to play a clip.
Yeah, this is a young man who, not so young, but a man who came from Singapore a decade or more ago and has really become an Afghan, has changed his name, has been accepted into a family and community, and who has been mentoring. He was a doctor working with Afghan refugees in Pakistan to begin with, but he's been in Bamiyan province for a decade and working with young men and women and boys and girls and educating them about Gandhian peace, about nonviolent movements toward peace, about using tactics where I wouldn't have to feel my life was at risk to come and join them. And they have been educating and opening eyes and building a movement very small as yet and could result in absolutely nothing, but looks like what I think Egypt and Tunisia looked like 5 or 8 years ago. At some point, people have to start building and strategizing and educating about nonviolent resistance, which apparently today took out a president in Yemen,
right,
before we even had a chance to switch sides and start bombing him.
Yeah.
So, there is a power here that people don't recognize.
Well, I think you're a part of bringing that to light, and I'm glad I have a microphone here where we can amplify that. I want to play a clip. I was very taken with him. Immensely articulate, beautiful, peaceful guy. Let's play the first clip from Hakim from the Afghan Youth Peace Volunteers in Afghanistan.
What is the mission of the group?
The original intention of the group was to raise the voice of peace from among the ordinary people of Afghanistan.
Is that a popular message among people in Afghanistan?
No. Peace is... when President Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2009...
Was given it anyway.
He was given it, yeah. He represented the sort of peace that people understand here, a peace being war.
I thought it was interesting that they understood Orwell over in Afghanistan as well.
Yes.
I really like that clip. Let's elucidate a little bit on what he's talking about there, that the idea of peace is not popular in Afghanistan. Is that right?
Well, it's almost incomprehensible. People have not known it. Their parents didn't know it, and they have a hard time picturing it. They are in a culture that's very divided along ethnic lines, that has been torn apart by endless violent feuds and vengeance and honor codes for a long, long time, which has been interrupted by incredible incidents of nonviolence. You go back to Badshah Khan, the ally of Gandhi in the northwestern provinces of what was then India and is now Pakistan, who was Pashtun, the largest ethnic group in Afghanistan, who's buried in Afghanistan, who created a non-violent army that drove the British out of there. And such things have been done and can be done, but Afghanistan is a place where people have known nothing but violence, and it seems to be the young people who are able to imagine something else and are able to set aside more of the trauma and the terror that their elders have lived through. And luckily, you know, two-thirds of Afghans are young. It's a very young country with a very low life expectancy.
Well, it seems to me that he also mentioned President Obama's winning or giving or receiving, I don't know which verb to use there, of the Nobel Peace Prize, which certainly made me choke on my breakfast cereal when I heard it. talk a little bit about the reaction in Afghanistan to President Obama being given the Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, I wasn't there at the time, but my impression is that Afghans very quickly, if not immediately, understood that this was a peace prize being given to the top guy waging war on them. And it was. You know, this was someone who campaigned on a platform, I will escalate the military. We will have the biggest military ever, at least since World War II. We will escalate the war in Afghanistan dramatically. We'll use drones wherever we want. Was advertised as and has performed as a more militaristic candidate than either of our two big parties would have put up 4 or 8 or 12 years ago. And he gets a peace prize.
David Swanson is our guest, author of War's a Lie and Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency. He blogs at davidswanson.org and warisacrime.org. David, I'd like to hold you over for one more segment. I have one more clip I'd like to play, and I'd also like to see if we can't help people understand what happens along ethnic lines. What is the ethnic landscape in Afghanistan so we can get a greater understanding of who and how these people relate to one another? Will you stay on one more, please?
Sure, sounds good.
Great. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman on AM 620 KPOJ. Our guest is David Swanson, who just came back from a peacekeeping mission. I'll call it what I think it is, civilian to civilian. He will be our guest in the next segment. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Time to get mad as hell in America. Adam Klugman is on Portland's Progressive Talk, 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Our guest is David Swanson, author of War is a Lie and Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. He has a tremendous blog at davidswanson.org and warisacrime.org. Everything you wanted to know about Afghanistan is there. David Swanson, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back.
So I want to play another clip from Hakim. So we're talking about you filmed an interview with a gentleman named Hakim, who is from the Afghan Youth Peace Volunteers, an immensely articulate, kind of beautiful spirit of a guy who seemed very, very clear about what was going on in Afghanistan, who was in control, and how the international community is behaving. Let's play the clip.
The people of Afghanistan don't see the ethnic division as insurmountable, but they realize that the years of war and division has not given them enough of an opportunity or space to make that happen. So it's not insurmountable, but it's going to take a lot of effort. And I would also say that it would mean that the people of Afghanistan need to be able to recognize the systems that are bringing division within their society. And that system principally is a system of power in the hands of violent, power-hungry people backed by the international community.
Sounds like this country. he really has a bead on what's going on. So he's kind of saying that the people, let me see if I interpret and then you can correct me. He seems to be saying that the people do not see the ethnic divisions in their own country as insurmountable, that the greater obstacle is really the fact that there's a tremendous amount of power in very few hands in Afghanistan, and it's that power base is being backed by an even more powerful international community, which essentially is us. Do I have it right?
I think so. Just to elaborate, when we in this country hear about the U.S. and NATO negotiating, sitting down and holding peace talks with the Taliban and the other warlords that are funded warlords are fighting against, we think, oh my God, that's great. That's good news. To be talking is better than to be bombing, which of course is true. But what some Afghans tend to think, which we don't hear about, is here's our new military enemies, our new foreign occupiers negotiating with these terrifying criminals who used to slaughter us and cut my parents' heads off and negotiating power sharing, right? To be forgiving and reconciling is one thing, but to have one gang of criminals negotiating the sharing of power with another gang of criminals when we don't have a seat at the table, when we don't have real representatives right. of the Afghan people at the table, you know, that's not independence and sovereignty and unity. That's it's better than more bombs, but it's not a solution for us, the Afghan people.
Right. The condition of women in Afghanistan is not good, but there was an interesting post on your blog about a filmmaker. We've got about 2 minutes left. Tell us that story, because I thought that was a really interesting story about cab drivers and women driving in Afghanistan.
Yeah, conditions for women across the board have not improved at all during this decade of U.S. NATO occupation. But there are improvements, and there are women struggling. And when you see women driving a car in Afghanistan, it's a great rarity. And here's a film called Afghan Women Behind the Wheel, which you can find. I think it's Afghan Women Behind the Wheel is the website as well.
Right.
And it's a very powerful film sort of shows you the culture of Kabul and the struggles of women, and the women who are learning to drive is sort of a metaphor for everything that the women are trying to do and that they're going to have to be able to do if they're going to be part of the kind of movement that has taken off in other countries.
Driving is a kind of protest for women, is it not?
It is. When a woman drives, it's generally assumed that she's working, that she's gainfully employed, which is, you know, a horrible, horrible sin, far worse than driving. And of course, some of these women are. And one woman who's almost the star of the film becomes a taxi driver. It's an incredible degree of independence for women who in many cases have none.
David, we have 1 minute left. That's our music. I've been asking everybody to define freedom. Could you take a crack at it yourself? The whole theme of the show is freedom, since we're into spring and Passover and Easter rebirth. So what is freedom mean to you?
I don't think I can improve on Cicero, even if millennia have passed. Freedom is participation in power. And if you're not participating in power, it doesn't matter how many choices of junk food you've got at the store, you're not free.
David Swanson, fantastic definition, by the way. David Swanson is our guest. DavidSwanson.org and WarIsACrime.org. David, thanks so much for being here.
Anytime. Thank you.
He is our very good friend, David Swanson at DavidSwanson.org, a phenomenal blog. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman.